Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 156.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we applaud Marianne Williamson for having chutzpah. I am your host, Nikki Farsad, and unlike most people, I'm not running for president. But I am here to talk incessantly about what's going on in America, which this week includes the continuing census shenanigans, shady cabinet members, resigning ambassadors, and other odds and ends of Beltway politics. We'll also take a look back to 2 weeks ago and discuss the commodification of pride. I am so excited by today's panel because we have returning to the show, and you guys know I like a good returning. We have the author of the musical Fiddler on the Rooftop Bar. She's so fucking talented, you guys. And you've heard her on the show before. You've loved her on the show before. You guys, it's Marsha Belsky.
Hello.
Hey, Marsha.
Hi. Thank you for having me back.
And for the first time on this show, this guy, you've seen him on the televisions. He was on IFC for a very long time. I would qualify that as a very long time. Was it a very long time?
Well, I was on IFC a little bit, but I was on True TV for a long time.
Oh,
but
I've sorry. Bounced around. I'm just mixing up my
networks. Well, I've worked
networks,
for so
I
many
think.
Low-level You're cable networks that it's hard to keep track
King
of.
King of low-level cable networks. He's also host of another Earwolf podcast called Beautiful Anonymous that if you have not subscribed, you should immediately do that because it is so great and surprising and moving and funny and weird and all of that wrapped into one. You guys, it's Chris Gethard. Hey, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm glad we finally found a date.
I know. I'm so glad this worked out.
Yeah,
he's also the father of new progeny. Oh, are you public with that?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Great.
I have a child.
He has a child. We both have infants. We just talked about sleep training or whatever. I guess that was technically a sleep training conversation.
Well, Marsha asked one simple question of like, are you both tired? And then we ranted for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's why I asked that to parents, because that's how you get them to just start talking about like what they're going through. Like, are you tired? They're like, thank you for asking.
I will now bore you.
No, I don't find it boring.
That's very nice.
Sometimes.
That's really nice of you. The fucking, by the way, ex-boyfriend I ran into yesterday that I can't stop talking about, he did me a great kindness, and he was like, you look the same. And I was like, fit! I mean... That was a great kindness because 6 months postpartum, I do not look the same. But thank you for saying that.
But
nice.
Then is he saying that your pre-pregnancy body looked pregnant or like post-pregnant? It's like, how dare you?
I think it's just like being nice because like, you know,
yeah.
I don't fucking look the same. Very nice, though. I mean, I think I have the same vibe like as a person because I'm the same person. All right. Let's get into it with topic number one. Okay, so we're going to do like a bunch of like Beltway things in this one giant topic that's broken down into mini topics. So Trump really wants to add the citizenship question to the census. The Supreme Court said no. They thought that he maybe had like a sinister reason for doing it. They were correct.
Yeah.
Because there was also, I don't know if you guys remember, there was like a guy who died and then his estranged daughter found, a Republican strategist, his estranged daughter found like a memo and like leaked it or whatever. And the memo was just basically like, if we add a citizenship question to the census, it'll help with redistricting or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like an evil, it was like evil email, like subject line was like evil email. And anyways, So the Supreme Court found all of that out. They said no. And then Trump's, the Justice Department's legal team was like, no, we're going back. We're changing our rationale. And we want to swap out lawyers. And the judge was like, that's not, you can't do that. New York Federal District
Court,
whatever.
Yeah, they gave no reasons for it. And the original set of lawyers, it said, are like experts in this field. And then the new set of lawyers they were proposing are just random.
Yeah, yeah. They're like fucking Saul or whatever.
They're probably people
like
loyal to
Trump.
Personal
injury lawyers or
That's
something.
Why if it actually revealed internally, like it would be revealed that they were handpicked by people who would be loyal to Trump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Completely.
I'm sure.
Okay, and then as we were on our way to the studio this morning, and I was on a slightly delayed subway, though strangely I wasn't late, Chris.
I was late. I'm sorry.
This fucking guy with his newborn, am I right? I read that he's doing a Rose Garden announcement today, as we're probably taping, that they're going to try and do something, some kind of executive order to get the citizenship question on the census, which will undoubtedly face legal challenges. And it's just something they don't want to give up. And rather unhelpfully, Trump said at some point, well, we want to add it because of districting.
No. They want to add it so they can weaponize the census and get, I mean, probably because of districting as well.
Well, for literally because it creates an undercount.
They're
going to
hand it to ICE.
That's helpful to minorities.
They're going to hand it to ICE. It's Gestapo shit. They're making a list. Like, of course, they're having trouble rounding up undocumented immigrants in the way that he promised that he would. And this is how they're trying to get a better idea of exactly where people are. And you're going to make people afraid of the census, which will give inaccurate reporting.
And the inaccurate reporting will benefit
districts. Exactly, Republicans.
Will benefit Republicans when they draw district lines for 2020, which is what they do after they do a census.
I feel like there's a few things that have happened with his administration where it's like, you hear it casually and you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Are you a citizen or not? And then you get just under the surface and it's like, oh, there's all these motives
layers,
that go beyond.
Yeah.
Same thing where it's like it's so easy to be like, we're going to stop illegal immigration. And then people go, well, yeah, of course, the word illegal is in it. And then you're like, oh, but this is being used to skirt international asylum laws and people fleeing from countries we destabilized. Like, this is...
They're so good at the word branding. Pro-life, aliens, like, all of this stuff is used to exactly trigger moderates into being like, well, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
And it's not. Like, yeah, it's horrible.
Right? Didn't they also... It used to be global warming, and now it's climate change.
Yes.
And that was a... I've heard that that was, like, a conservative effort to rebrand it as something less freaky.
Interesting.
Was it?
Well, I don't know, because I was thinking
it was,
they do the global warming, like...
because it was more accurate.
Because
it's not, like, actually... It is warming, but then it leads to just more extreme weather changes.
I would think it's against Republicans because you have, like, these dumbasses tweeting, like, global warming, but it's 40 degrees outside today.
It's February, and it's like, thank God for global warming.
Yeah. But that would make sense that they want to obscure, because the whole thing is that annually the temperature of the entire world is raising, and that's the issue. But so to change it to climate change does kind of soften it, because they're like, so the weather changes, all right, it's a windy day, you know, who cares? And then we're gonna start having tornadoes in New York City and all of a sudden people will care.
I mean, basically what's interesting about this issue is that they're not letting it go. I mean, they're really, really not letting it go. And they know that even an executive order is going to lead to legal challenges. So, like, is it just that he's making – why?
Trump doesn't care about the law. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like everything he's doing, like, has been proven to be illegal. It's not just the tax stuff where it was like, we want you to release your taxes, but you don't have to. No, he's flat out doing illegal things and flaunting it. And he's done it his whole life and career. Like, you know, I used to work for these lawyers, and like in real estate law, Trump has been sued by everybody he's ever worked with. He doesn't pay anybody and he just gets sued. And I think he believes he's above the law because he is, in a way, with his wealth and now as president. So I think he doesn't care when the Supreme Court says no. He's going to do or try to do whatever he wants. And there are some things in place that will hopefully stop him. But it's scary. Like, I really think that they want to weaponize the census, essentially.
Yeah.
And I hope he's not going to get away with it. But as soon as I saw the Supreme Court ruling, I knew it made me happy.
I was like, I just didn't realize that you could go back and say, no, we want to still do it, but with a different reason. I just thought once the Supreme Court is like, no, thank you, then it's done. But it's not. This is legally murky territory, I think.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to fill out the census?
They come to your house. They come to your apartment.
Have you never filled out a census?
I think I've always just assumed it was junk mail. This is a thing that I'm...
It's kind of big and...
Do you have to? Is it like when you're like vote? Like,
yeah. I think you're required to.
This is one of those things to keep your vote or something.
But it's also, you should, because it helps, you know, it's about the delivery of services and it's about voting. It's not, there's nothing sinister. And census data, that's the other thing.
I'm like, why do you want to know this?
Right. But it's not, so the other thing, legally, the census data cannot be shared with other departments. So if it were ever to be shared with ICE, that would be illegal, right? They would be taken to court for that.
I know, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore with this administration, what's legal and what's not.
Right. I mean, I hear that.
How hypocritical am I to get worked up about census-related stuff when I have literally ignored the census for all 4 years of my life?
I think the whole purpose of this mini segment is, Chris, fill out your census form.
I will this year.
That is the purpose of this segment.
Sure.
All right, let's move on.
It's immediately leaked to the public.
What? 3 members of this household? So controversial. Okay, let's move on to this next, next topic. Okay, so by now everyone's heard of this monster Jeffrey Epstein and his child trafficking ring. And he went to court for similar charges 10 years ago in Florida under then Attorney General, state U.S. Attorney, Alexander Acosta. He ended up serving 13 months for solicitation and got to leave prison 6 days a week to go to work.
12 hours a day.
Which doesn't sound like prison. It sounds like your house is being tended for termites and you need a place to stay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, what was that? How did that deal ever happen? I've never even heard of that kind of deal.
He went to a county prison, right?
Which means what? They're less horrible?
State and federal prisons, that's where child molesters will get fucked up.
Oh.
I've heard county prisons, it's like a much...
They're into pushier. Child molesters?
I think it's just...
county prisons, they celebrate you. Yeah.
I think they can just keep people separate a little bit more. I think it can be...
You're not tossed
to the wolves as much.
It's a rich people prison.
There's more like tennis.
Yeah, it's like the Martha Stewart prison, probably.
Right. Well, okay. So now the question is, so Acosta, presided over that deal making. He's now labor secretary. Should he resign?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. But he's not going to, I don't think. Trump's trying to see if he can get away with it, essentially. And I wonder if he'll be able to, because Acosta's whole thing is like, 13 months was the best I could get, and so it's better that he did that than nothing, as opposed to like the truth that he didn't want to push it, that he probably knew how many people would be exposed if they got into the ring. And now Trump, too, is going to put like, who is it? It's not recusing himself from the case, Barr. And it's like, you know, all these people who are directly involved. I think in some ways it's going to indict both parties. And so it's like Pelosi's like, well, he should resign, but we're not going to investigate. And I'm like, yeah, because there are creepy male Democrats, too. Like, I hate people who are like, well, Bill Clinton's a creep. I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't like Bill Clinton. You know, what do you want me to say?
Yeah.
I think I'm actually like taking a hard stance that I don't like any pedophiles. Like, I think Mike Drucker tweeted that. He's like, you know, my anti-pedophile stance has actually gotten me pretty far. But... And it's frustrating because, like, he absolutely should resign, but they're waiting to see if they can get away with it. And if they can, he won't. If it becomes somehow politically unviable, but I don't think non-viable, I don't know what the word is, but I don't think that it's going to.
Okay, I mean, let me just play devil's advocate here. And there is an argument, like, the way that they handled that case, they didn't inform the victims and there was all this disregard for the law that happened at that time. But so you mentioned Bill Clinton. What about these people that just have, like, a mere affiliation with Epstein?
Is Pizzagate real? That's my question about them. This is kind of what those Pizzagate people were saying.
But they don't
time,
care
right?
about this. That's what's crazy is, like, they're so worked up over a fake pedophile ring, and then a real one gets exposed, and they're like, doo doo doo.
Right,
where
right,
are
right,
they?
Right, right, right. Well, unless it happens at a pizza parlor, it doesn't really count.
They also said apparently they like Epstein's house was like a house of horrors. Like they went in, and there's like these like his house was set up creepy. Like he has these like dolls like hanging from the ceiling and like super creepy decor. And it's like, and his whole thing too is that there are all these people online being like, he's not a pedophile, he's a hebephile, which means you're into like tweens and teens as opposed to children. I'm like, if you're making that distinction, I have some questions for you.
Yeah.
Like, if you're really hell-bent on being like, one is worse than the other, it's like, okay, maybe that's true, but why are you so adamant about this? Like, when Bryan Singer got exposed, one of his friends was like, I'm surprised that Bryan fucks teenagers because I always see him ID the guys who hit on him. Okay, if your friend is IDing the men who hit on him because they look so young, he's probably a pedophile.
Yeah.
This is your new Foxworthy bit.
You might be a pedophile.
You're probably a pedophile.
I was a little like, you know, I just found it a little weird. I mean, a guy that rich who gave money to that many campaigns and was so involved with so many different people with a private jet, right? A jet that got utilized by many to kind of drag through the mud the names of people who just were merely affiliated with him felt a little weird to me. Did it not? I mean, the Acosta example, I think he should absolutely resign and fuck that guy because he behaved illegally. Mm-hmm. But all these articles that are coming out about people affiliated, did that make you uncomfortable or you were like, okay
with it? It's a touchy thing. It is. It's like, you know, if I'm in a photo with Harvey Weinstein, does it mean that I'm guilty of his crimes?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But at the same time, like Donald Trump allegedly raped a 13-year-old with Jeffrey Epstein's help. So it's like the people affiliated might be guilty.
Yeah.
But it's also, you can't assume. I think it's kind of hard.
Right. It's just some of the, it's like the Donald Trump and Bill Clinton-ness of it all makes it so juicy for the making the connections. Also, Congressman Ted Lieu made a connection the other day, which I thought was like creepy, which the Labor Secretary Alex Acosta like had recently cut the budget or something by 80% of like investigations into child trafficking or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's
wild.
Fucking weird connection to make. That's upsetting.
On the topic of like demonizing anyone who ever affiliated with him, I feel like it's hard for us as comedians because if you can affiliate anyone who's ever affiliated with a creep, we are all then. We all just being like, I've opened for creeps, you know what I mean? Like, I've opened for people who were later outed as creeps. Does that mean
I've worked for people I knew were creeps who were being creepy to me because I wanted the opportunity for myself. And I didn't know if I ever found out it went further than that, obviously I would stop. Like, there's this guy like Aaron Glazer, and then like it's sad because he got accused of raping somebody, and what's interesting is that he booked more women than anybody else in the city, I think because there's a shield for himself. And so it's like, and then when I found out, obviously, like, you stop associating him. But I knew he was a creep at the time. I didn't know how far it went. But I wanted the spots for myself.
You know, I had a situation with a guy that got a very prominent dude who got Me Too'd. And he was, like, my friend. And I never, ever, ever got any inclination ever that he had any of that in his background. And his was like more of a murky one, kind of like Aziz Ansari's, where it's like murky. And I like I didn't know what to do with that friendship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I still don't know what to do with that friendship.
I have it's a hard thing when
it's a
like
hard
somebody,
thing because you're like I've had positive experiences with this person and they've done shitty things. I think
but it helps them get away with it too in a way because I think people are very strategic about how they act around who.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I think they sometimes pick victims that either won't be believed or who maybe aren't as liked in the scene or whatever.
Right.
And then a lot of guys do that with me, I think, where like they treat me with respect and this and that. And then I've really learned to absolutely believe when like a quieter or maybe less public woman says he did this to me. And even if he's never treated me that way, I think they kind of pick and choose.
We've gotten really off the rails here.
Sorry.
But my fault. It was interesting. I do want to ask you just on closing on this segment. Do you think Nancy Pelosi should start like a, I don't know,
investigation,
try to get this guy to, you know, to get this guy fired?
I, in general, I have great respect for Nancy Pelosi, but I do not understand why there's not more actual actions being taken by her towards everything, even with impeachment. And it's like, I feel like to dance around impeachment and publicly say like, oh, politically, it's not going to serve us well. It's like, well, you're not doing the right thing. And I bet there's a lot of people who are kind of on the straddling political parties who would be the ones going, well, you're trying to do the right thing. And I think if you don't kind of take the gloves off and throw some punches on issues like these, you are going to make your whole party appear to just be sort of cotton soft in a way that people don't expect.
It's insane to watch. You have these Republicans who are willing to cheat, always aggressive. Like, you know, we read this, like, Trump won basically after the Access Hollywood thing because he threatened to put Hillary in jail. Like, Republicans love this type of aggressiveness.
They and younger Democrats, Supreme Court seat.
Like, two Supreme Court seats. Yeah. Like, and you have the younger Democrats, and that's why we like the Ocasio-Cortez and Elon, like people who are fighting this aggressive fight because you have to fight this fire with fire. But you have people like Pelosi and Schumer and like people in my parents' generation where they still think you can like do things by the rules and like beat these people. And we're not trying to cheat, but it's like you have to be aggressive. And Pelosi seems to think that this sort of like borderline centrist approach is like going to bring Republicans back onto our side. But I wish they would realize that you need to motivate Democrats and people who want people to do the right thing, as opposed to try and walk this compromising line with people who we've seen over and over and over again will not compromise in any way. Like, take them for what they are. I don't understand how they look at the Republicans and won't just, it's like Pelosi is like, I really respect her too, but she's part of the gaslighting. Where it's like,
right? I mean, it's shocking to me because I feel like this is a slam dunk. So I would have, if I were Nancy Pelosi, would definitely call for an investigation. Yeah. It'd be hard for Republicans to be like, look at that case and not say that, yeah, that's fucked up. That he got that deal. That he presided over that as an attorney and as a U.S. attorney, and he should. You know, he should resign.
The only reason I can think she won't is because she knows it will expose Democrats. And instead of seeing that as a good thing, that we should take the people out of our party and have this moral stance and that it's not a bad thing for the Democratic Party to weed out even the people within our own, I think she's not going to do it. That's the only reason I can think she wouldn't.
All right. Let us move on to the next topic. Okay, so a bunch of leaked emails allowed the UK... showed that the UK ambassador in the United States called the Trump administration clumsy and inept.
Clumsy and inept.
I know, which is funny because it was like a pretty mild burn at the end of the day. Like I thought.
England, that's like, fuck your mother.
Like, right. No, this guy has to resign basically because of these leaked emails that felt kind of mild to me. Of course, like Donnie went nuts and he said the wacky ambassador that the UK foisted upon the United States is not someone we are thrilled with, a very stupid guy. He went on to like weirdly like insult Theresa May about the deal she made, or that, you know, that she couldn't get a Brexit deal done or whatever. Anyways, and that she didn't listen to him, you know, because he's so fucking smart. Mm-hmm. First of all, were you surprised that this like led to a resignation?
Well, the only reason I would say no is because I know that the British tabloid culture.
Yeah.
Like they love sinking their teeth into controversy. So yeah, I'm not surprised. Because even when I read his resignation, he wasn't saying that. I don't think he said anything like, I particularly regret what I said.
Yeah, he said, he didn't.
This is making it impossible for me to actually do this job anymore, which I think that I get that this is going to be the thing that you are asked about from now until the end of time. Mm-hmm. So this is, you've blown out your ability to actually be an ambassador because no one's ever going to focus on anything else. That I get.
Yeah, and I mean, it completely, your access to the White House, you know, and the thing you're supposed to be there for gets hampered. Hampered?
Mm-hmm. I think that works. Yeah.
Is that the word?
That works, yeah.
I want to throw dirty clothes into that word. So I feel like it's a communications job. It's a like, you know, stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like me and the White House are bros. Like that's part of the job of an ambassador is to like have that relationship with the State Department and the White House. And you can't do that if, you know, if Donnie's like, don't invite that guy over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally get that. I do think, though, we're all ridiculous if we think that ambassadors, even before Trump, weren't sending messages to each other, to their home country like that, you know?
I think it's, to me, it almost feels like once you know an ambassador's name, they're probably not under the radar enough to be an ambassador.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so true.
Once you know, heard their name, something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
He's either been, like, assassinated or he's, like, what's the guy? And oh, wait, no, never mind. That wasn't an ambassador. Just kidding. I was thinking of the guy who started World War One, the Austrian.
Franz Ferdinand?
The Archduke?
No, wait. Archduke.
The Archduke, not an ambassador. Ferdinand.
But even royalty, too. I feel like if you're lower royalty and people know you internationally, something
you
bad
something
has happened.
Bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was another person implicated in the Epstein thing, Prince Andrew.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Which is very, but like he solicited some girls?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Okay.
Everyone
see,
look
what,
it up and tell us.
You know what? Like, I'm not, yeah, I don't know. Or
could it have been he was in a picture?
Just,
yeah.
Was it just a private jet flying situation?
I opened for Prince Andrew on the road once. So I'm affiliated with this.
You're affiliated.
He's very funny. He's very, very funny.
He kills.
All right, let's move on to the next topic. Election security, guys. Finally, there was a hearing, and it wasn't really widely reported, but there was a hearing. On election security. Mitch McConnell hasn't wanted one because he thinks that Democrats want to try and nationalize everything, like that's their solution, and also because anything about election security makes Donnie feel very uncomfortable, and he doesn't want to hear it because he thinks it questions the legitimacy of his presidency.
Which it does.
Absolutely. But it's not like we're trying to take away his presidency. It's happening.
Yeah.
His presidency is happening. It's just about the next set of elections. So what are your fears about 2020 as far as like just the straight up apparatus of democracy here when it comes to voting? And do you think that this hearing, and as a closed door hearing, do you think anything will come of it?
My fears are everything. And no, I don't think anything will come of it. I think the only hope for 2020 is to have a Democratic candidate that can somehow blow out the election, because you can't cheat a close election. You can't cheat a non-close election. You can only cheat a close election. And so I think Trump is counting on that in a way. I feel like there's obviously going to be Russian interference, maybe because he's being watched now, like they won't be able to, but the Russians are interfering all across the world. Like this guy just got caught. Who was it? It was like the Italian prime minister just got caught trying to accept money from Russia for his far-right campaign.
Wow.
There's guys in Australia. Yeah. It's like it's a very strategic attack by the Russians. I think a lot of it's founded in white supremacy and nationalist ideals. Like, and so my fear for 2020 is everything. I genuinely fear that if he wins again in 2020, there'll be some sort of like authoritarian coup. Like he's joking about this. He posted this video where it said, like, Trump 2020, Trump 2024, Trump 2028. And he was trying to be a troll, but it all feels so like people don't think it can happen here. And I feel like everybody else, especially the Jews, are going, no, it very much can. Like,
I
wonder, the one thing that makes me wonder is with the internet, you know, I wonder what would have happened during other authoritarian times with the internet. And people being able to communicate, it kind of undercuts the gaslighting and the doublespeak and things like that a little bit. But
unless your internet is totally controlled like it is in
exactly.
China.
Or, but the problem is too, yeah, it's like we have really mobilized in our spaces of the internet. You know, there's been a lot of revolutionary action, but so has the far right.
Yeah.
That's how this like white nationalist men's rights sort of like resurgence movement have all found each other is on the internet, whereas they used to exist in these small pockets. So I don't know. I feel that my only hope for 2020 is that it's not a close election. I think that's the only way they can't cheat it. But I don't know.
Can I share with you guys some of the bills that the Democrats are trying to get passed? And I'm curious to know what you think of them. There's one, the Protecting American Votes and Elections Act, which would require the use of paper ballots in American elections. Another one is Defending the Integrity of Voting Systems Act, which would make hacking into an election a federal crime. Seems like that wouldn't
seems
be.
Seems like it should be.
These don't seem controversial to
don't
me.
Seem, right? They don't seem controversial. Here's another one, the Foreign Influence Influence Reporting in Elections Act, which would require political campaigns to report contact from foreign governments to the FBI. And none of these bills have passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Weird,
because they don't seem controversial. They don't actually seem to nationalize the voting apparatus, which is Mitch McConnell's stated fear, which maybe you can say that about paper ballots, like requiring states to have paper ballots. But like that's
reporting foreign influence, how does that nationalize the vote?
How does that nationalize the vote? But even having paper ballots, it's like you can do it however you want. Just make sure there's a paper trail is mm-hmm. still like giving, you know, the state's right thing is just, I don't know. I find that frustrating.
I went and got Irish citizenship.
What?
Interesting.
When I started the process a couple years ago, it was
wait,
like,
did you start it after the elections?
Well, that was the thing. So I, in 2016, I went to Ireland for the first time and I visited my grandfather's village and I got very sort of emotional and caught up in it and went and got the citizenship to get in touch with my roots, but it takes a long time. And by 2018, when I got it, my wife was like, we have to pick up the pace because if I get it before my kid is born, he gets it too. And my wife and I had conversations of like, this kid, we need this kid to have an EU passport because by the time he's older, it might be necessary.
Yeah.
That's very interesting that you did all of that.
Yeah.
And we are allowed to have dual citizenship with the EU?
With Ireland, if your grandparents were born in Ireland, you can become a citizen. It's called the right of return.
Interesting.
So my mom is first generation, so she technically already is an Irish citizen, even though she's never filed the paperwork. And I had to go and get my grandfather's birth certificate, marriage certificate, death certificate, my mom's birth certificate, like basically track from Ireland to me. Everything that proves that I have this roots in Ireland.
Yes, just the finding that paperwork. It sounds very stressful.
Very stressful.
And I can't handle it. I just like got like hives.
But it was also really beautiful. Like I never knew. My grandparents got married at a church in Brooklyn that I've walked past 1,000 times. Uh-huh. And I had no idea.
That's so sweet. Did you ever see the movie Brooklyn?
Yes.
Yeah.
You should, I love that movie.
Saoirse
Ronan?
Yeah. I have no idea how to pronounce it.
It's a great movie.
But yeah, now my kid has it. So if he has to flee the apocalypse, he's an Irish citizen. Mm-hmm. He can go live in anywhere in the EU. I have an EU passport.
Wow. That's nice.
That's rad.
You can hide a lot of places in Europe.
I can go to Cuba too.
Wow. Oh my God, that's crazy. That's true, because there's no embargo for Europeans.
P.S., I've been to Cuba.
I've never been.
Awesome? I don't have an EU citizenship.
You snuck in.
They let Americans go.
I don't know what the status is now, but I went during the time when we were allowed.
Yeah.
I knew kids who studied abroad in Cuba somehow.
I don't know, like...
No, there's... You can do things. There's, like, cultural exchange.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it.
I had a buddy who went, and I was like... I wanted to go, but I was like, man, the idea of getting one of those cultural exchange visas sounds like a nightmare. And he's like, dude...
No, it's real easy.
He told me, he's like, I just bought a ticket through JetBlue, and JetBlue has a counter where when you get to the airport, you can just go get a visa.
Yeah,
you
don't
have to file ahead of time. You just go up to a counter
at
JFK, and you're like, I need a visa. I'm an artist. And then you have one.
That's
interesting.
Guys, life
hack. We got a lot of places
to
flee.
To Cuba.
I like this.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's wonderful, by the way. I
feel like
highly recommend.
You'd do great in Cuba, Marcia.
I think I'd do okay.
I think you'd be a hit in Cuba.
I feel like I'd either get murdered straight away or I'd be like very popular.
No, there's no crime in Cuba.
Really?
There's like literally no crime.
Seems like more and scary.
Great advances in medicine, right? Aren't they making like major advances in medicine?
I don't know if they're making advances. They just have medicine everyone can access it. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. Also, they can control like the spread of shit. So like, I think like Zika and whatever, like they controlled that. You know, it's not
good for Cuba.
Yeah, you know what? They're doing all right. And they
Well, now I got to go to Cuba. I'm going to do my special in Cuba.
That would be incredible.
Oh, that would be so interesting. Which I performed in Mexico City. And there was, it was like huge. It was like a 7,000 person auditorium. And they were all, half of the audience was wearing those like headset thingies to get the interpretation. And they were interpreting in another room and then sending it through the headsets. And so half the audience could just speak English and get my joke. So like I would have a punchline.
Yeah.
Half the audience would laugh.
And like
the
30
other
minutes.
Half the audience would laugh 30 seconds later. And it
Nightmare.
Was like, so it was amazing. I had
really?
rolling, it was like the entire time just rolling laughs.
I did a
Did you have to pause forever after
Yeah, there
joke?
Was some weird pausing I had to do, but it was great. I thought fun. I was traumatized. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be horrible. I thought it was going to be the worst, but then it ended up being so great.
That was like, I did a show recently where they were giving out edibles before the show.
Oh.
And I get up, and it was awful because I get up in the middle of my set. And it was, I think that the entire audience's edibles hit literally directly in the middle of my set because the first half of my set was going so well. And then the second half of my set, I was getting laughs, but it was 30 like, seconds right, after right, the punchline. Right, right, right. So either they're like, it's like if you're getting translated or if you're stoned, you have to wait 30
Is this
seconds.
In the city?
It was in the city, but then I also did this one show in like Portland at this weed cafe, and it was, I thought it was gonna be so fun, and it was awful.
Toronto, same thing. I did one of the weed rooms in Toronto. I was like, that sounds like the easiest audience ever.
No, it's horrible.
It was bad?
Horrible. Oh my God,
they're just looking at you like it takes them so long to like
process what you're saying.
And the people,
that's so interesting.
And the people hanging out in weed cafes and weed rooms in Toronto are smoking like military grade potent drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So
they're like tripping on pot.
They
are 90-year-old.
They are going someplace else. Oh, and then you're up there and you're like, growing up in New Jersey, it's pretty wild, guys.
Exactly. Like they need like music or something. Like you're up there like trying to talk and they're like, they couldn't barely talk to
like
someone at a party.
It sounds more like a glow sticks.
Yes.
You
they
know,
just want
situation.
Like a very quiet didgeridoo.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm glad that our discussion of election security got
to
us
didgeridoos.
To didgeridoos. And I knew that it would. I kind of had a feeling.
This is the relief America needs.
All right. Well, you know what? We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the commodification of pride. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Today's show is sponsored by Paired. Basically, Paired is a relationship app for couples. You and your partner download the app, pair together every day, and then Paired gives you questions, quizzes, and games to have fun and to stay connected and deepen your conversations. And my God, is this a fun app? Speaking as someone who is in a couple, I believe that this is an incredibly fun app. Also, like, illuminating about your relationship. Recently, a Paired question came to us: what makes you feel lucky in your relationship? And we kind of had very similar responses to this, which is that, like, we don't really like bicker or argue, like, certainly not publicly. Like, the general vibes are good. And we, as parents, especially parents who go to a lot of playgrounds and a lot of like school functions and stuff like that, do see couples who bicker a lot and do see couples who like just seem like they're on the edge. You know what I mean? And we both had kind of a version of this answer, which was that like, that is not how it, like if you were to step outside and like see us having a conversation, like you wouldn't feel that way. And we felt very lucky about that just because we spend so much time with other parents for whom that's not necessarily the case. I don't mean to talk junk about other parents. Anyways, but there you go. It was a really just fun and just like sweet, like realization about our relationship. And there's just so many more things that the app does. There's these games, there's quizzes, there's like the managing jealousy quiz or the emotional intelligence quiz, which I think, again, just illuminating about, but what the other person is thinking instead of just kind of like wondering what the other person is thinking. I think a lot of relationships are based on like not exactly knowing and guessing. And then, you know, you do something like answer a paired question or do a paired quiz, and then you're like, oh, I'm not guessing anymore. This is weird. This is new. This is cool. So I don't know. I think it's awesome. And here's what I think you should do. Whether you're just a few dates in or you've been together a long time, it's time to lighten the mood and just have fun with your partner by using Paired. So head to paired.com/fakethenation. And that's Paired, paired.com/fakethenation. And you'll get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. Again, that's paired.com/fakethenation to sign up today. Connect with your partner every day using Paired. A happier relationship starts here.
The Citizenry is a socially conscious home decor brand that partners with master artisans across the globe to bring time-tested craftsmanship to the modern home. You guys, I like cool, pretty things. And I got like this large, long pillow for my bed from them. I think it's called a lumbar pillow. Yes, it's called a lumbar pillow. And it's super colorful and I really love it. I also like sometimes hug it when my dude's away and I just like need to like hug a pillow. Is that a weird thing to admit to? I don't know. Anyways, The Citizenry creates exclusive collections sold direct to you online without the middleman markup. With pieces crafted in over 15 countries, their collections are designed to highlight the unique materials and craft traditions of each destination. Their iconic lumbar pillow, that's the thing I got, comes in bold designs, reimagined and inspired by the geometric patterns used by the Zapotec tribes of the Oaxaca region in Mexico. Each pillow is hand-dyed and takes a talented weaving cooperative 3 days to make. And oh my God, they do look real pretty and just cool. The Citizenry also donates 10% of proceeds directly back into the artisan communities around the globe to help these entrepreneurs take their businesses to new heights. So I think you guys should check it out. There's a lot of like lovely stuff on the website. For a $50 gift voucher towards your first purchase of $200 or more, go to citizenrypodcast.com and enter the code FAKE. That's citizenrypodcast.com, CITIZENRY podcast.com. The code is FAKE and you'll get a $50 gift voucher towards your first purchase of $200 or more. Back and we're ready for the next topic. Okay, so I want to talk about the commodification of pride and just in general, like the commodification of wokeness. Hate that term, but anyway, and I know the subject is a little 2 weeks ago, but like I really want to talk about it and I forgot. So here we are. Did you notice, or over recent years, have you noticed a corporatization of pride, and what do you feel about it?
Yeah, definitely. It's something a lot of people have been talking about. And the articles we read, it is interesting because, like everything, it's like there are different sides where, on the one hand, I guess public support, like LGBTQ, is still not accepted, you know, nationally or universally. And so, you know, corporations like just being purportedly in support public, I guess in some ways is good culturally. But yeah, a lot of it is about how you're taking it away from the revolutionary origins and you're funneling it into capitalist gains that don't go back into the LGBT community, because the only reason businesses are going to support LGBTQ is when it becomes financially viable, which it has. So that's what they're doing. And then there's been these reports of a lot of these same companies not only don't give a huge percentage of that money back to LGBTQ organizations, but actually give a lot of money to anti-LGBTQ right. causes. And one of the interesting...
sometimes it's not even a direct line like that. Sometimes they're giving money to, a member of Congress who has supported...
Who has anti-LGBTQ policies, yeah.
We're 2 years away from the Chick-fil-A float, is what we're saying.
Oh my God, 100%. Yes, like, exactly. Like, and it's interesting because, like, one of the things it pointed out to with this corporatization of pride is it makes it so that pride is not about any one unified sort of thing, or it becomes sort of only this rainbow flag that's supposed to have this all-encompassing meaning, as opposed to the individual fights that are still happening and the political movements that are still, like, needing traction. And I feel like pride has gotten more political in the time of Trump, you know, and things like that, people feeling like, we definitely still need to fight. But with the corporate stuff, it just feels a little eye-roll-y to me, where it's just kind of like, okay, you know, thank you, McDonald's, I guess. Like,
For having French fry sleeves that are
But I guess it's
rainbow.
Good they're not anti-LGBT. You know, it'd be, I guess, strange if they just ignored it. But it also is so focused on the month of June. Like, someone did this hilarious video of at midnight on July 1st, all of the corporations' logos changing back. From the rainbow, as soon as they can, like we're out.
I should say I'm married to a lady, so first of all, who cares about my opinion? I will say,
I care about you.
Thank you so much. I just want to put it out there that I'm aware. I'm aware of
that. We're all aware. I'm also straight and married to a guy, so apologies. But anyway, I still think it's interesting.
I will say, I have a perspective on this that I feel very lucky that I live in Queens. I live in Jackson Heights, which in the time I've lived there, I've come to realize a very, very special place politically. Everyone is engaged. I'm in AOC's district. It's where the Tiffany Caban fight is happening right mm-hmm. now. Like, it's the only place I've ever lived in New York where everyone, we know the name of our councilman. Danny Drum is my councilman, and he started Queens Pride. Queens Pride is a very, very big deal in Jackson Heights, and it isn't as corporatized. When I went this year, I got to see a version of Pride that was both a celebration and very joyous, as well as a lot of people on, you know, making it clear through their messaging and megaphones and signage of, no, there's still fights to be had.
Yeah.
And it certainly when I saw all the think pieces about what has happened to the Manhattan version of Pride, it did remind me a little bit of what it was like going to South by Southwest around like 2013, 2014, when you're like, I remember there was one year that
when it's been corporatized, yeah.
I remember I went there a couple years when it was heading in that direction and everyone was like kind of grumbling about it. And then I remember the dam breaking one year where I went where, I forget who the artist was. It was a rapper performing in a stage that was built to look like a giant Sprite vending machine.
Oh my God.
So the stage was built in a way where they were performing on the place where the Sprite can would fall out in a big God. Sprite vending machine. And the Manhattan one does have a little bit of that feeling, right? Of like, and then of course there's the issue too that people bring up where you're like, well, the fact that it's corporatized has good and bad, right? Like
yeah.
There was a time where people couldn't hold hands in a store and now some right. of the stores, but then there's also a section of that parade where my understanding was that the NYPD now has
yes,
a section,
exactly.
which is like that whole movement started with a trans woman, I believe, throwing a brick at a cop, right? Like, or something along those lines. Like it was about fighting off cops who were raiding Stonewall. So,
well, and the cops, NYPD did this thing where some of the organizers said, if you're a police person marching with Pride, we don't want you to wear uniforms because the NYPD has been historically terrible to marginalized communities, but including LGBTQ.
Yeah.
And NYPD then countered back, well, now we're going to send half the amount of cops to Pride, which is like fine. But at the same time, they're literally being like, you saying that we don't do well policing your community. Now we're not going to police or whatever. So it's because that's how I feel, too, is that the corporatization kind of does both where you're saying, OK, now this is something accepted. But then it kind of paints this broad brush of LGBTQ people, get over it. You have rights now. And it's not true. You know, there's still so much violence that LGBTQ people face. There's, you know, you can't get a wedding cake, you know, all this stupid shit. And I think the corporate element kind of obscures the fight by being like, we're all good now.
Right, right. It makes it feel like there's so much more progress that has been made than has actually been made. I think it does feel rather inevitable, though, because the majority of Americans, so if millennials are numbering in the majority, they are, you know, totally fine with the LGBTQ community. And they're just generally more progressive and generally more woke. And so the numbers dictate that if you're a corporation, you have to sell to that audience. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to sell to boomers who might be more conservative. You're going to start focusing on where the majority is, even though, like, the Electoral College is designed for, like, minority vote. Capitalism is designed for a majority vote. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I actually somewhat disagree with one aspect of what you said, which is about the boomers. There's a part of me that wonders if the corporatization is positive in that sense, meaning I think for my parents' generation, the idea of gay marriage was just, they didn't understand. Like, that was a fundamental thing. Like, there are people in my life who are of that generation who would say, I just don't get it, and didn't comprehend. It doesn't matter if you get it. That's not the issue, if you personally get it. But now I know that the idea of gay marriage is on TV and is on Modern Family and big sitcoms, and they literally don't care, when for decades of their lives they cared. So I almost wonder, like, if you go into a Macy's and there's a rainbow flag, is that, I think for those of us who are in cities and see the movements and the fights that are still happening and seeing that it still does necessitate some, you know, real militancy in cases or awareness. I wonder if the idea that you could go into like a suburban JCPenney's and it might have a pride flag, if that doesn't normalize it for the boomers.
Normalizing is good, but I think the other side of that is that there was a tweet that people were like, don't bring fetishes to pride because kids are there. And it's like pride started out as an in your face. We're not fitting into your boxes. You know, it's like, don't tell me that I can't wear leather to pride because it's like I'm allowed to sexually like express whatever I want. And that's what this is for. And I think the corporatization kind of desexualizes it in a way and makes it less radical where they want it to be like more suit and tie, politeness, getting married. Like a lot of the fight was in gay marriage, which was an absolutely wonderful thing. But then you have a lot of queer people being like, that wasn't my fight. My fight is just to be able to live sexually free and to, you know, have representation in TV that is sexualized, romanticized, not just the like fun gay guy or like the man-hating lesbian, you know? And so I think there's two sides, but I definitely agree with that. But I feel like that's the other side.
I think you'll be happy to hear that when I attended Queens Pride this year on 37th Avenue, which if you're familiar with Jackson Heights, is one of the main commercial thoroughfares as the parade was happening, I did watch one man lead another man on a leash who was wearing a leather pig mask and
that's what pride is about.
And a thong, a pig mask and a thong, and he was being led around on a leash on an avenue that I promise you right now is a bunch of people with strollers food
yes.
shopping.
And
food
that's shopping. What I think the corporate picture of gay life wants to directly fight that, where they want, and it's like not like no queer people are all one thing, and that's what pride is about, is showing that queer people are everything, that we're, that like it's everybody. And it's interesting because I think that the more corporate it gets, the less that's going to be allowed. You're not going to see any sort of out there
Although the Manhattan Pride, which was huge in the, you know, biggest in the country and all of that stuff. Did you guys go to the Manhattan one?
No, because it was World Pride and it terrified me. I'm like 3 million extra people in the city. I can't do it.
Yeah, it was
I went to Jacob Riis for my friend's birthday and that was just as good.
I went to Queens Pride and then I was at my nephew's 3-year-old birthday party.
Cute.
Straight Pride.
Yes.
So I went to the World Pride and it was funny. So I basically go every year. Like, I just think it's joyous and fun and I like to see the parade, you know? I support, you know, obviously. And this year, the corporate aspect was palpable. I mean, it was insane. Like, just the corporate logos for weeks that had been leading up to it was, I was already like, wow, like, this is so much more than I've ever seen. Like, this is crazy. Each, you know, CVS having like a little, you know, pride section of the fucking drugstore. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. Every supermarket, department store, everything like had a little pride thing. So I was just like, wow, this is like pretty, I just felt like it was an onslaught of a corporate presence. And then in the actual Pride, they had stalls and you can get a lot of free stuff. Did I get some free stuff? Yes, I did. But they were just like handing out. And like, there were just like, the most ridiculous one was a truck of Oreos. Ooh. And they had made this Pride packaging for, and they were just handing out full size packages of Oreos. And and everyone was like going crazy trying to get these Oreos. And there was these old ladies who were clearly not there for Pride. They were there to get free stuff.
Yeah.
Just packing up their little rolly things full of Oreos and like free skincare samples and all of that stuff. And then, you know, when they left, they had all their free things and like, and I remember, you know, people were handing out flags, and you know, and you know, I could literally see these women just like, just putting like stuff in their,
So it's commodification, like over community.
But I heard those old ladies are actually in a relationship together now,
and that could be it. Although,
the Oreos brought them together,
much like Oreos, the binding of that cream, they wound up bound together after.
That was beautiful.
It was so, but so that part of it was kind of ridiculous. And there's a lot of people like really, really getting, you know, getting their free stuff. And it was just all about that. But it was also still, there was still the, you know, the dudes in the thongs and the pig masks, you know what I mean? That was in your face, just like people walking around very practically naked or whatever, or naked. And that element was still there. And the whole thing was still very joyous. I mean, I thought, it's funny because I was doing the whole thing with a stroller. And it was like, you know, 3 million people in the city. So really packed. And I thought, oh, of all the places where people are going to respect the stroller, it's going to be Pride. Mm-hmm. And they did. It was just like, it was still extremely joyous for how heavily marketed and commodified it was.
Yeah. Do you think it's like despite of the capitalistic aspect now that's put in, like it's almost like there's still community and still like sexual openness, like despite the corporate influence?
It's almost like, I mean, on the day, the corporate influence just felt like
A backdrop.
Yeah. It just felt like, oh, I'm going to eat a couple of Oreos while I watch this float and dance to Robin songs, you know?
When you talk about, it's funny to consider the idea of like, no, we want to be sexual in our way, in your face, as both an expression of freedom and a statement of rights. And it is funny to think about like people going, oh, we don't want that around our kids. I feel like the real issue is like some of those people are behind closed doors getting like vibrating eggs put up their assholes.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like it's
but they're like, I do it in private because I'm a Christian.
It's a condemnation of sexuality in general.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
There's
right?
a lot of shame around sexuality in general, like especially in America. Yeah.
What do you guys think about, okay, so there was a Reclaim Pride event in Central Park at the same time, and thousands went to that as well. People who were, you know, who were unhappy with the turn that Pride has taken. It kind of reminded me of the fissure in the Women's March, where there were two women's marches or whatever. And I wondered if that was kind of, if it's good that there's the kind of, that there are people speaking up against what they think is come of Pride, or if this kind of fissure weakens the movement in general.
I think, I mean, there's validity to both, right? Like, I mentioned I live in Jackson Heights, which if you look it up, historically, I think has become like a bastion of support for the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. Famously started, there was a murder in the 80s that it was a guy who was cruising and he got killed and the city wouldn't prosecute it as a bias crime. And the whole community came out ever since then has been like very fiercely devoted. Even still, also one of the, if you look it up, Roosevelt Avenue has been known for years as a place where a lot of trans community hangs out, especially in the Hispanic trans community. These are not things I'm claiming as my own, but just facts. And then even in that neighborhood last year, a trans woman got beaten up in front of the McDonald's on 82nd Street. So you can't pretend that that stuff's not happening, even in a neighborhood like mine, where I think is probably where people feel safest in some communities. So in that sense, I think that you can't forget, and it can't just become free Oreos. In another sense, I think there is an issue I see being in the city, being an artist, being around the types of people I'm around, where I think that there is a part of me that feels like progressivism does have a habit of eating itself and dividing quite often.
It does,
so,
but that makes sense
so
to me,
so much so than I think
but it makes sense
conservatives.
Because progressives and marginalized people are not homogenous, whereas the people we're fighting essentially are. And so it makes sense to me why Republicans have a lot easier time, or non-progressives, if you want to put it that way, like even if they don't identify as Republican, have an easier time getting in line with each other, because in our communities, we have different interests, you know, and even within LGBTQ and especially within women, you know, and other marginalized communities, like, there's always going to be factions because it's made of individuals. And the other side is also made of individuals, but they seem to have a sort of wartime mentality of get in line, win the fight, deal with the rest later.
Although with the Women's March, I mean,
there's lots of problems with the Women's March.
There's lots of problems with the Women's March, but it feels, I think
one thing is, I get, you're right that there's going to be more factionalism because it's just.
But dominant groups even silencing minorities within that, like that's with LGBTQ, is that a lot of the corporatization also brings the conversation of why white LGBTQ people still have privilege within those communities. And I think corporations or like a corporately based pride is going to stifle that conversation. It doesn't benefit them. So I think that when you have this faction of people who are dissatisfied in a lot of different ways, but even within that, I doubt that all the 2,000 people in Central Park were there for the same reason.
Right.
You know?
But I also, and I think though that it makes the movement less politically powerful when people can't kind of combine their. Like, I don't think there was no play. It seems like there could have been a place for Reclaim Pride, what their concerns were at regular Pride. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it seems politically less savvy. I don't know. I'm speaking out of my ass. Like, I just don't have a strong opinion on Reclaim Pride.
I feel like 2016 made me, like, I feel like the macro of the, you know, as far as Pride, I certainly feel like I have no right to speak to people who feel like they need to fight harder in that community, certainly. But I do think on the macro level, it kind of relates to 2016 really made me feel in a big way like, oh, right, the Democratic Party in my lifetime at least, and seemingly far back when you read up on history, it was never a party of people who thought the same thing. It was different groups of people who had to team up because the other side wanted them gone and dead. It was immigrants and Jewish people and Black people and Catholics and unionists and gay people. And what the one thing they all have in common is that religious people wanted them gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a handful of states in 2016, they managed to convince the unionists and probably some of the Catholics, sadly, as
Catholics
an Irish Catholic,
and evangelicals have kind of bonded over the abortion issue.
Well, Catholics are no longer like, you're going to, like, it used to be like, oh, you want the fucking Pope to be the president and become a puppet to the Pope. And you look at all the old Thomas Nast political cartoons of like, you know, Irish scum Catholics crawling out of the river.
Yeah.
Like, now that's no longer the thing. And they were kind of able to just, in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, go like, hey, if you're a unionist or a Catholic, what the fuck do you really have in common with these other people? And I feel like that's kind of what happened. So splintering in general scares me, I will say.
But it's hard because I think the other side really exploits that because there's an idea of calling out versus calling in where when you're in these communities that are being attacked, but you want to make progress within that, or there's issues within those communities, it's really hard. It's hard to have a private conversation. It's like two women can never argue about something because it's a catfight. So it's like it's really hard to have conversations when you have the other side just so excited to see you. It's like the Democratic primary. It's like we should be able to push the issues. We should be able to push progressivism, push people further to the left and not have it splinter our party. But it does, you know, it's like you still have these fights that I think are spurred on by the media in some ways of like the splintering really helps the other side. But at the same time, within those communities, you have to feel able to say, no, I'm still not being listened to. And I think we try and reach the people who we feel will listen to us. So I think that people would want to challenge the LGBT community within it because they feel more likely to be listened to as opposed to going to these people who are never going to listen.
And I want to say, I totally appreciate Reclaim Pride and regular Pride. And I'm not,
there's a lot of sides to everything.
But I hope it didn't come off like I was criticizing Reclaim Pride. I think that they're,
but it's fine to criticize even.
Like, I'm just the thing that I'm always curious about is how conservatives step in line and they don't, you know, they have the worst fucking president in the history of time as the leader of their party, and they have stepped in line behind him after after insulting him for months during the campaign. They still do it. They just, that's what they do. And
they have a
we don't do
catchphrase.
That.
They have a catchphrase that you can convince yourself. It's "Make America Great Again."
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people who can convince them themselves, yeah, that's what I've wanted forever.
It's and all for the greater good. Everything evil, yeah.
And it's a catch-all for whatever your belief is. And we don't have, on our side, we don't have that catchphrase.
And how could we?
I feel like their catchphrase should be, hey, the other side wants us all dead. Like, that's what
Chris,
it was.
Chris, that's good.
Wasn't that, like,
if we could shorten that for a hat, that would
be. Republicans are so good at taking individual people to be like, look, no, we have a black person. We have a woman. Like, I swear the first female president's going to be like a Republican Margaret Thatcher type. Like, they're really good at obscuring the conversation.
That?
Horrible. But they're really good at obscuring the conversation.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Well, thank you for talking that out with me. So that, you guys, that's the end of the show. How do you feel?
Chris?
I feel tired and ultimately inconsequential.
Wow, that is a darker how do you feel than I was anticipating.
I like that. Yeah, I feel really tired, but I don't even have the excuse of being a new parent. and I feel just like anxious, but also kind of, it's always a relief to me to actually just talk about shit. I feel like with all the topics, it's stuff that's been on the back of my mind that I'm like, people at parties are sick of me.
Yeah, so it's nice
to be here and sort of
talk about it. You guys, I thank you so much for doing the show. And I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and find you online and in person, wherever you would like them to find you. Marsha Belsky, where do they do that?
You can find me on Twitter at Marsha Belsky, M-A-R-C-I-A. And yeah, that's where you can find me. And come see my musicals, Fiddler on the Rooftop Bar.
Definitely do that, you guys. Chris, where do they find you? Chris Gethard.
Chris Gethard on Twitter, Chris Geth on Instagram, chrisgeth.com for tour dates.
Ooh. Wait, it's chrisgeth.com?
Yes.
Was there another Gethard?
Somebody squatting on chrisgethard.com. Some guy cyber squatted on me, and
wow,
I've never heard that term,
dick.
And I love it.
Yeah, and when you go to the site, it's illegal what he's doing. It's just got a picture of a grinning man and then a message box, clearly for me to message him. And I messaged him, and I was like, hey, I'm the only person who's going to want this domain. How much? And he wrote back, and he was like, yeah, we've been waiting for you to get in touch. How much are you willing to pay for it? So I wrote him back, and I said $7. And then he wrote back and was like, my client, they claim they're a third party. So he's like, my client finds this offer insulting. And I said, okay.
Good.
I said, okay, $12. And then they stopped communicating with me. And I email them about once a year. And I'm like, I just want to reiterate, no one else is going to buy this. So $12. And I'm just waiting for them to
sell me my website
for $12.
They think you're going to fold, which is interesting. And it's like, no, because if you Google me, people can still get to my website. Like, yeah. I just want it.
Also, dudes, like, I had my TV show, and that's when that was most valuable.
Yes.
And now it's canceled, and the value is depreciating daily. So take the $12. It's not even going to be worth that much in another year.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God, cyber squatting. What a term.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I never heard of that. All right, you guys. Oh, you know where to find me on all of the things. Oh, you know that gig I'm doing in D.C.? I'm doing like a storytelling show for a Far magazine, but they're going to live stream it, and it's on August 1st, and you'll be able to see the live stream on Facebook. And it's like, I don't do very much storytelling. This is an early foray into storytelling. So you can tune into that if you're interested in seeing that, you guys. I want to thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Harry Nelson, our talented audio engineers, Andy Christens and Jared O'Connell. Gabi Alter wrote our theme music, by the way. Don't forget to buy his new album, Yes, Gabriel. Yes, Gabriel. And also thanks to Lily Fleshler, who helps with research. And you guys, I would love to hear from you. Send us your feedback, you know, topics that you think we should chat about, guests you think we should have on. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981, because I'd love to hear your voices. Or you could drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts, because it really does help people find the show. Thank you, guys, and we'll be back next week. Okay, bye.